Thanks for joining us at the Digital Leaders Podcast, where leaders of the digital economy share business advice from their professional experiences. Our guest today is Sean Davis, who is the president of the Artist Collective, which is a group of professional and amateur artists from around the world focused on defining the postmodern relationships between art, technology, business, and culture. Sean is also an entrepreneur and founder of Slapshot Foods, which makes healthy, hockey-themed snacks. Sean joins us today to discuss his journey of finding happiness and fulfillment with NFTs. Oh, it looks like Sean is ready. Let's get started.
I don't think I've ever formally introduced myself, but after, you know, a lot of just reflection on some of the things that are going on in my life right now, I guess I would say I'm the president of the Artist Collective, which is a group that recognizes and celebrates artists. The Artist Collective celebrates and recognizes artists of all mediums. One of the biggest things that we focus on and concentrate on is helping the traditional artists, you know, the painters, the sculptors, the potters, the wood carvers, things like that, to move into the digital space or Web3. And now it's been kind of coined as Art3 for the art side of it, you know, as from an NFT perspective. So that word, that phrase is now floating around a lot. But what it does, it's assisting the traditional artists. And there's literally millions of them that have not moved out of the traditional space, but and into the digital world. Some of them don't prefer, you know, the technology of using computer-aided software programs. So what we did to bridge the gap was there is also a very rising surge in sales right now, not so much with PFPs anymore, but with something that is called a phygital. And a phygital is a physical piece of art, say a sculpture or a mural. 3x5, you know, oil painting with epoxies and different things to provide depth, a true traditional art piece. We take those pieces and we put them into a 3D generator. And that allows us to now have a three-dimensional digital image of the actual physical piece. So if you think about it, if someone would go into, say, an art gallery for an opening and they purchased a piece, well, they receive a laminated piece of paper that states, you know, this is now yours. It's certificate of authenticity, but there isn't really any legal binding to it other than that piece of paper and the piece of artwork itself. So what the NFT does is it provides a right of possession, if you will. And that right of possession is then linked to the physical piece, which will then be sent out to, you know, the new owner's home or on their yacht or, you know, in their corporate office, wherever they choose to have it. And it's really been a game changer. We've already seen a lot of phygital galleries popping up, what they refer to as pop-up galleries. And we kind of want to get in on that a little bit more, you know, but that's a little further down the line and perhaps even another conversation. But again, to finish the question, I would, from a humble standpoint, a humble response, I would say I'm the president of the Artist Collective, and I'm also a NFT photographer and NFT enthusiast and artist.
Nice. Well, Sean, it's great to have you on the show. I'm super.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here. I'm super excited to have the conversation, and this has been a long time coming for you and I. We first connected months ago on LinkedIn. And, you know, I've really wanted to have you on to share some of your story and talk about your experience with NFTs and finding that community. So like so many of us in the NFT community, you've been able to find happiness and fulfillment in your NFT art.
I have.
And I really want you to be able to share some of that story with our audience. So maybe we can start there. Like, how did you, in your own words, how did you get involved with NFTs, and what has that experience been like for you?
Good question. I've been an artist more or less as far back as I can remember. I received my first 110 camera when I was 6 years old, and I immediately began taking obscure angle shots and things like that. I was drawing at the time. I started drawing at the age of 4, and I haven't looked back. So that carried in through love of art, through grade school, through right into art college. I ended up going to art college, and this was in the late 80s, early 90s. And I landed a job at a company that's no longer in business, but they were for a very, very long time, by the name of the Franklin Mint. And I worked in their creative services department. Back then, there were no, you know, computer-aided art programs for creating magazine ads and things like that. It was all hand-drawn and coupled with photography that would be pasted onto, you know, the area that would be photographed for the magazine. So I worked there. I worked with a company early on using an art program on an Apple IIe. And it was called CorelDRAW 8, and they're pretty well known. They have a couple of really great art programs, and I was using them for a while. I was developing graphics for their textile and numerical screens, and they ended up getting bought out by Money Magazine, and my contract as a freelancer had ended, and it was unfortunate because a lot of the employees, when they were bought out, they lost their positions as well. But, you know, business is business, I guess. But so art college led to the continuation of love of photography, upgrading cameras, moving on to DSLRs. You know, quick backstory, my father was a photographer and we had a dark room in our basement. So there was a lot of things that I learned at a very early age, the entire process, color film, black and white film, things like that. But there was a shift in the art industry and it propelled me into another, out of the art industry and into another profession for the better part of 15 years. But art came back to me when I was working in yet another profession where they needed some help designing their logos and things like that. And I said, you know, I can do this. This is what I went to school for. And I kind of started getting back into it again. I mean, but I didn't dabble too much into it. And what really ended up happening was by happenstance. And that is we'll get into this in a moment. I launched my own brand of beef jerky. And at the time, prior to that, I was a massage therapist specializing in deep tissue corrective for 17 years. But I had left the word artist in my profile, in my main profile, in LinkedIn. And if anyone is familiar with LinkedIn, the way that their algorithms work, they pick up on those keywords that were what they call hot words. And within the first 3 days or so, I started seeing, you know, people you may know that is a fellow artist. Well, it was like the senior art director for Blizzard Entertainment or for Walt Disney. And I didn't know any of these people, but I started reaching out to them. And within about a week and a half, I started seeing more, but they were more prone towards the NFT community. Now, The side story to that is my son has been in the NFT community for almost 2 years now. And I kind of started asking him when I was connecting with these folks, and he hangs out in Twitter. I hang out in LinkedIn. So I was kind of getting both sides of the story. He's more PFP oriented and I'm more one of one artist oriented. And so he educated me a lot on just the basics, opening a MetaMask, opening this, opening that. But within the last, it's been 10 months since that happened, and it's literally changed my life. I mean, there's some things. Slapshot brand is in kind of a lull right now, in the middle of the ordering season, as they put it. But so I've been concentrating all my time in the NFT space, and it's been quite fruitful.
That's a really interesting story. So I'm actually learning, even though we've spoken so many times, I'm still learning a bunch of stuff about you during this conversation. I didn't know you went to art school. I knew you worked in media or in entertainment, I think, but I didn't know you went to art school. I didn't realize you were actually president of the Artist Collective. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. Well, thanks. Yeah, you kind of want to refer to it as a vanilla position, but it's anything but. I one of the things that prior to the other four co-founders asking me and you know, more so Ken and Victor, they're the ones that they're the brainchild of the Artist Collective, and the neat part about it is all of us have our own unique abilities, and we puzzle piece them together, if you will, and created the collective. But they took notice that I'm a multitasker. I have ADHD and, you know, selective hearing that I like to say to my wife, but it's that tenacity. It's that always needing to do something. My wife has, you know, said before, I'm either 150 miles an hour or I'm asleep on the couch. There's no in between. I mean, my favorite environment when I worked as a server, you know, I like to use this analogy. My favorite environment for me to thrive in, as some people would see as absolute and complete chaos, would be I'm working in a back kitchen of a 5-star Zagat high-end rated restaurant. And for some reason, there was a glitch and the entire evening was double booked and we're right in the middle of dinner and the broiler breaks. So, and the special that evening is, you know, London broil. So it's I like to be practical. I love to troubleshoot. I love to find rational and again, practical solutions to, I don't want to say all problems are simple, but, you know, if there is a way that, you know, you can work around it. So if there is needs to be damage control, we keep that at a, you know, at a very minimal level. But, you know, it's very exciting to me, and taking on this role, it's exhilarating. It's probably the coolest thing that I've done in my life with all the things that I've done in my life that we would probably end up having to have another podcast for.
Sure. Well, it does sound like you're very excited for it, and I'm very happy for you as well.
Well, thank you. But go ahead.
Let me switch gears just a little bit, because I know in addition to being an artist, you're also an entrepreneur. You talked about that a little bit just now. Your company, Slapshot Foods, actually, for the audience who's listening, you can see into the back of Sean's background. He's got all of the NHL paraphernalia and hockey gear on the wall. It's a huge, is it Philadelphia Flyers?
Correct. Yes, that is correct.
Philadelphia Flyers fan. And so you've got a company, Snapshot Foods, and you make hockey-themed snacks.
That is correct.
And I know that things have been really interesting for you as late. Can you tell us a bit about the company and how things
absolutely.
Are going? Yeah,
absolutely. As I mentioned a moment ago, it's a little bit of a lull. I'll get into that in a moment. But to give you a brief background of that, I was a massage therapist specializing in deep tissue corrective. I was a nationally accredited. I actually still have them. It's through the end of next year, a nationally accredited massage provider and teacher. So I was teaching up and down the East Coast and things like that. But I worked for so long as a massage therapist, I kind of peaked, and you couldn't really advance anymore. I was very grateful to have, you know, a 3 to 6 month book out, working upwards of 30 hours a week, being booked out for that long. It took a very long time to build that book. But as I mentioned, it was deep tissue corrective, and deep tissue corrective is extremely detrimental on the provider, meaning me in this case. It really speeds up the time for the long-term detrimental effects it has on the body. It doesn't matter about body mechanics and health and, you know, work-life balance and sleep and yoga. Yes, those things help. But overall, I mean, when I left the massage industry a year ago, in 5 days, it'll be a year since I left. I was in for 17 years and I was just about to approach 14,000 logged hours of massage. So I was constantly re-aggravating bursitis, tendonitis, had a little bit of frozen shoulder, lock-up shoulder on my right side. Strangely enough, I'm left-handed, which was weird. But having that stagnant feeling and being being the type of person that I am, I usually only stayed in a major profession for up to about 10 to 15 years. And then I kind of feel that I was kind of burned out and I wanted something new. I wanted some new type of stimulation. So that feeling started about a year and a half before I came up to the 17-year mark, and I wanted to do something different, and I wanted to provide some type of healthy snack, and I'm a big beef jerky advocate, and my brother was a travel hockey coach for his twin boys for a number of years. And a good friend of mine was, or still is, his son plays travel hockey. He's in 15U. Now, to give you a brief background on travel hockey, there's over 3,000 interconnected rinks throughout the country that is part of this travel hockey community. It's literally hundreds of thousands of kids from all age brackets, as young as 6 up to 18 years old. And that leads into the farm leagues, getting, you know, scholarships to colleges, which leads into farm leagues and then leads into the NHL. So I was at the ground level of this, of where I wanted to launch it. And that year and a half, I did a lot of research, a lot of data trend marketing and things like that. And, you know, loving beef jerky, coming to find that it's a high protein snack. And then that epiphany happened because I had found out that the number one go-to protein snack for the travel hockey community is in fact beef jerky and meat snacks. There's no sugar, or very low sugar. It's low in carbs. It's extremely high in protein. And, you know, it's just pluses across the board. So I reached out to a couple of different suppliers and I found one about an hour from my home. They've been in business for 90 some years and 97 years they're coming on. FDA and USDA inspected. And I said FDA because they have other facilities. They make dog food and gerbil food and, you know, animal feed and stuff like that. So that's not mixed in with the beef jerky building. So yeah, man. So I went and pitched. Their main demographic was, or still is, the hunting and fishing community and the Amish and Mennonite throughout Western Pennsylvania and the Ohio Valley and Point South. So I came with a pitch deck of a completely different demographic, being the hockey scene, loved hockey, grew up with it, you know, been a Philadelphia Flyers fan since 1974. And they ate it up. They said, this is great. So they allowed me to see their metrics of what their highest selling SKUs were, or products to the layman. And I picked the top three that just so happened to be their original flavor, their hickory smoked flavor. And yeah, away I ran with it, man. I designed having an art background, I designed the packaging myself to save on costs. I then worked directly with an artist who is affiliated with USDA, so they could tighten up all of the corrections and kerning and the you know, proper size of the nutrition facts panel and all the, you know, back end stuff that no one really thinks about when they buy a bag of Doritos or something like that. So all of that was taken care of. At the same time, I was building the website, social media, and filed for trademark. I received the trademark for Slapshot Jerky, which is the name of the brand. The umbrella for that is Slapshot Foods. And yeah, man, it took off early October. I signed on with social media giant for IG and Facebook called C Squared Social. Their main client is Callaway. So I felt I was in good hands. Sure enough, I was. I mean, everything exploded, man. It was great. But what I had come to find, where the mistake came in a little bit, and this kind of ties into, you know, one of your upcoming questions, this lull that I had hit. I launched right after, well, parent food companies only look at one or two new brands a year. And what I mean by parent food companies, like Sysco, like Aramark, Core-Mark, Delaware North, US Foods, Albertsons, and, you know, they have several other chains underneath of them, such as Target, Walmart, some of the bigger chain, Walgreens, CVS, you know, some of the smaller, they're still huge, but they're regarded as a smaller C store, convenience store. But they only review and look at new products once a year. That begins in July, and they do the ordering. If they make it through the submission process, they do the ordering in October. And I launched in October to coincide with the NHL. So I am in a little bit of a lull right now, because I'm looking for, you know, I'm kind of at the mercy of these larger companies. I can't, you know, they only allocate a certain amount of money a year. That money has been spent. So I have to roll into 2023 with kind of gritting my teeth a little bit. It's a fun process. It is. It's can be daunting at times. You know, the one thing that I would suggest with anybody that may be considering starting their own business is do your homework first. Don't look at the clock. Your life's going to change. If you have the ambition and the drive to do something, you got to follow through with it. And I've been at this for, I launched October of last year. So that's coming up on 10 months, I believe, somewhere in there, at upwards of 14 hours a week plus online. A lot, everything's done online now. So there's a lot of work behind it. You know, it's, you got to go for it. If you want something in life, man, you got to go for it.
I agree with you. You just have to go for it. And thank you for sharing that story. I know some of that, you know, some of the ups and downs of business, that can be tough at times. And I definitely appreciate it.
I wasn't familiar with it either. I was like, wait, I missed the boat. And they're like, you didn't miss the boat. You just have to wait till next year. So, and I've been speaking with a fair amount of the companies that I just mentioned. And, you know, the buyers want it. The buyers love it. I've sent them samples and things like that, but their hands are tied, you know, from a corporate standpoint, from the upstairs.
Gotcha. Yeah. So actually, when we spoke about this offline, and this was maybe a few weeks ago, you described it as it feeling like you had hit a glass ceiling.
I did.
Yeah.
And that is the glass ceiling right now. I am at a point where I have a decision to make. I'm at a crossroads. And coincidentally, as I mentioned prior to us starting this morning, I'm speaking with my supplier today. Some good things have happened with Slapshot, you know, in regards to, I've been heavily involved in the nonprofit and giving back to the community. Community outreach is very important to me, whether it be just providing product or from a monetary donation and getting involved. So, but this crossroads is really going to either fold the company or it can prosper. And it's a lot of this depends on the phone call that's coming up. So I'm looking forward to it. I really am. But, you know, there's a lot to think about. I've had a lot of sleepless nights over the last couple of months, knowing that glass ceiling that you mentioned, it's the buyers. I am literally at the will. The elephant in the room for me is my funding is running out. And I am not in a position to, you know, up my loans with the banks and things like that. So there's money going out, but there's no money coming in. And all of the money that I have been making through e-commerce and things like that, which I'm very grateful for, it's there's a lot of work behind that, you know, work that I can't afford to bring on a, you know, somebody to do 5 posts a week in IG and Twitter and Facebook and things like that. It's just not feasible for me from a financial standpoint. So things are getting a little hectic, you know, so I'm just trying to ride the storm. And I have a couple of prospects coming up, hopefully in the next week or so, but I need to bust through that glass ceiling, man. I really do. You know, the worst part about it is, you know, not to sound weird, but you know, I look up at that glass ceiling and I'm seeing myself, and I almost feel like, you know, I see my reflection, and I feel like that it's sometimes I'm the one that's stopping me from breaking that ceiling. But, you know, I have to come to the understanding and respect and realization that it is not me. I am at the will of these larger corporations. So if I find some sales someplace with a small C-store that is kind of very difficult to do, I've already gone down that road because I can't just walk into a liquor distributor or a small, you know, mom and pop store, because they're actually already tied many of the times to these larger parent companies. And then you have to fight for shelf space against other jerky brands. And some of them have millions and millions of dollars that they will give to that company's charity so they can be front and center, not to name drop, you know, but there's a couple out there that are, you know, I just can't hold a candle to, you know, I don't have that type of capital and funding behind me. A startup. I'm a one-man band. You know?
Understood. Wow. Well, thanks for being so open about that conversation. I know for a lot of times as entrepreneurs, we can sort of feel like it's just happening to us, like you were saying, like having to look at yourself in the mirror. But I think it's good for entrepreneurs to share these types of stories with each other. And a lot of our audience are, oh, yeah.
Oh, man. Oh, I've cried. I've cried. I've had some crying nights, and you know, all the things you work for, the monetarily, you know, when you do something like this, whether you start a bed and breakfast or you start a small coffee shop out of a truck that drives around to construction site, whatever it might be, the money that goes into it you know, you first view it as an investment. You really do. And when turbulence comes, you know, rough waters come and there's not near the amount of business, you know, the business that you had projected on the roadmap or anything like that. You know, I've learned to be conservative. So anything that may happen beyond that, as far as goals are, aspirations, both short and long term, it helps it be a little bit more of a surprise if something happens. Keep your aspirations small. Keep the expectations very low. Mm-hmm. But as we say in the Web3 community, head down, man. Build. Head down. You just got to concentrate and just keep moving forward. But when you run into the situation that I'm in right now, this crossroads, as I put it, that investment really starts to, the reality starts to set in that the investment starts to turn into debt. And, you know, it really changes the paradigm of thinking of how you want to approach, because you almost, for me, I mean, it took me a little while, but then that one night when I looked over my finances, 3 months ago, mind you, when I looked over my finances, the reality hit me. If something doesn't give, I'm done. That it's been a real struggle mentally. You know, I've had to shift that, keep myself from being negative about it and being, you know, staying positive is the most important thing. The other very important thing is to have a support structure around you. You know, when I say I'm a one-man band and I did this by myself, yes, I did. I did all the legwork, all the research, the packaging, the content, the product photos for the website. I did all of that by myself on my own. However, it's my family. It's my close friends. It's people that believe in the product, you know, after they try it and things like that. You need that support structure in the background to keep you going. My wife is a beacon. She's my foundation. She's my rock. I don't know. I think I would be living under a bridge out of a refrigerator box if it wasn't for her. She's been just so helpful. And, you know, she could even be having a bad day and she sees that I've had a worse day, you know, and I'm Italian Irish. So I kind of wear my expressions on my face. So she knows if I'm having a good day or a bad day, but yeah, to get back to that, the struggle's real, man. It's, you know, having that, the amount of money that one would invest into a company or into a food truck or website, you know, company that builds websites and things like that. The money varies, but if you do run into turbulent times, man, be prepared for, you know, that persistence and build yourself up to be, you know, to work against that negative, those negative things that are coming in. Because if it goes in, then you're going to fold. And I don't want you to fold. You know, every business owner and entrepreneur that I've spoken with in and out of the Web3 community, I want them to succeed as much as I do. And if not more in some cases, because, you know, I see that I know about their background. I know where they've come from and things like that. And it's, I don't know, it means a lot to me that we all succeed.
And I really appreciate the advice that you're sharing here with the audience. One thing that you said just now, I'm really glad that you sort of cross-referenced in the Web3 community and what things are like in Web3, because one of the other things that you said to me was that along the way, you sort of discovered NFT art and it gave you this resurgence of energy.
It did.
As
it did, very much so.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about that? I'd love to know, like, what did NFT art give to you that you weren't already getting in other areas of your life?
Well, as when I was a massage therapist and when I worked in, prior to that, when I worked in show business, I was still doing art. I was still doing photography. I was still drawing, sketching, pen and ink. Oh, goodness. Pastels, charcoal. So I still had a love for it. I mean, as I got older, I started getting into the art scene, the physical, of what we refer to as IRL events, in real life events, art galleries, openings, things like that. I've had work hanging in galleries in the Philadelphia region. Oh, just backstory. I live just south of Philadelphia. I've lived here my whole life. I mean, hence the Flyers and the Eagles and Sixers and Phillies and all that. But So I had some of my work, photography and artwork, in galleries, wineries, pop-up art shows, things like that. And the struggles that I ran into that any artist, traditional artist, may run into with what I'm about to say is getting into juried art shows. You know, not, let me start by saying, it always comes down in any industry, it's all in who you know. It's who you network with, not so much who you schmooze with. It's who you connect with on a sincere, respectful level, professional level. And, but being, you know, as they say, the struggling artist, you know, when I was going through that phase, you know, we didn't have the social media platforms and the things that we do now. I mean, it was, you had to physically go to the art gallery and say, will you hang my work? You know, or you would see it in the newspaper. And, you know, that they're going to have a juried art exhibition. So now you have to get your work framed, which is an investment in and of itself. You had to pay the application fees, of which are non-refundable. Sometimes they can be, they can range from, you know, $75 up to $1,100, depending on the gallery and the demographic location, where the gallery is and who they cater to. Then, you know, you have the uncertainty of getting selected for that, for said jewelry art show. If you don't get it, then you have a bunch of artwork that you just invested in that you're now shuffling around to try and get to another gallery. You'd also do what people that I know to this day, they love it, but they don't love it. They love the camaraderie of speaking with people and things like that, but they don't love the work behind it. And what I'm talking about is being a traveling artist, loading your van up or your minivan or your SUV with your tent and your art, of your physical artwork, and driving to your hotel, checking in, taking that all up to your room so it doesn't get stolen at night, bringing it back down to the car, driving to the area where the gallery is going to be. It could be windy that day and you got problems with your tent, and it rains, which is even worse. Like, you run into all of these, to me, they're barriers. And when COVID hit, as horrible, horrible it was for that to happen globally, there was a lot of reflection, not only from a societal level, but from an individual level. You know, there was a lot of reflection that was like, you know, what am I doing? What is, people had time to think about. They couldn't go anywhere, you know, and you had quite a bit of time to think about it. And it was, for me, I was like, what am I going to do with all of this artwork that's literally collecting dust? All the art galleries closed down. Who knows when it's going to open again? And again, it was around that same time that I was being introduced to the NFT space and the Web3 space. I had found out, you know, again, through my son, about the MetaMask and Phantom and OpenSea and Solana and Polygon and all these, you know, different chains. And I had already known that I was in this lull of the selling period with the jerky. So as I circle back to, like I mentioned before, that I needed to refocus. While that in its void, I needed to refocus all of my energy and all of my time to something that appealed to me. And sure enough, you know, art, NFTs. Hey, wow, I have an iPad. I have a tablet as well that I can draw on, you know, and I use a Wacom One, which is awesome tablet. It's a great starter tablet for artists. But, you know, I started dabbling with AI integration. I've been in Photoshop like night and day, you know, with my photography, and in Lightroom as well, and just doing different things. And, you know, a friend of mine, and including my son, he was like, Dad, you should think about, you know, selling some of this stuff. And I did. So I jumped on and I, you know, sold my first piece, and it brought me to the community that I'm in now. And it's amazing. This is part of my life now. You know, it's terrible to say about with jerky and all the stuff that I did. You know, I'm waiting for something to happen with that. But this is now in the forefront of my mind. The Artist Collective, what it means to me, how much compassion and empathy that we have for other artists, whether they be already established or just wanting to get into the space and see what it's like, get their feet wet, so to speak. So all of my attention has gone to that, you know, and I've even, unfortunately, I stopped, you know, doing some artwork in the last recent weeks because we just launched the Artist Collective, and it's really, really taking off in more ways than one. Our tentacles are just reaching out in all directions. So
nice. Well, what is your pitch to artists who you're asking to join the Artist Collective?
It's extensive. It's more than my 6 minute mark, I will tell you. But we have a fax page and things like that, but it's coming from the hospitality industry that I worked in for 35 years. I've learned to listen more as opposed to tell them what they need or what they do. And with the versatility of the Artist Collective, I'm the one that's asked any of the founders. We're the ones that will ask the question to the artist. Well, what are you looking for? What are you confused about? You know, what questions do you have? And then with those questions, that's how we tie them into the Artist Collective. As far as, you know, in short, and this has nothing to do with our digital gala that's coming up that opens up on June 10th, quick plug, in the spatial.io, spatial.io. But when they ask, again, this is all digital. I don't really do this verbally, so that I'm always writing stuff down, but I guess I've written it enough that I can do it off the top of my head. As I mentioned earlier, you know, the Artist Collective is a group of artists for artists, and we provide a variety of services. But the number one thing is, for us anyway, is to bridge the gap from traditional artists to the NFT space. There, as I mentioned earlier, there's a lot of artists in the world that don't understand it. You know, they want to get in, they're curious, they have questions. And we're the ones that answer those questions, you know, and I'm talking about basic Web3 questions. To the folks out there that may not be too familiar with Web3, you know, I'm sorry, I don't want to sound foreign to you, but, you know, the MetaMask, the ledgers and understanding blockchains and understanding these are all the things that we explain to them in great detail, but not enough to get confusing. We keep it very simple, stupid. And we're actually the AC right now, right before we got on this call, I was on another call, and we're looking at a couple of different companies to possibly partner up or collab with that allows artists or collectors more so, and artists to move through their platform to where they don't even need to set up a MetaMask or, you know, a Phantom wallet, depending if they're doing Polygon or Solana or Ethereum. They can actually use their debit card. They can use their credit card. So it's bypassing all of that. And they're popping up everywhere. But we're talking with two of them right now. So we help the artists, but at the same time, that extends into full services. And what I mean by that is, okay, so they're not familiar with setting up a wallet, and they're not familiar with this. Do you think the chances that they're going to understand setting up something in OpenSea? To us, we do this every day. You know, to a lot of the audience members, we do this every day. So a lot of these artists don't know how to do it. And it's you know, for everybody, I think in some sense, yeah, and if you say it wasn't, you're either really good or you're lying. It's a little frustrating, you know, to get into that whole process, you know, with writing down all the new passwords and the backup this and OpenSea and, you know, the two-step verification for everything. And, you know, I understand security measures, but, you know, people, they just want to click. So what we do is we not only help bridge the gap to merge them in, but now we take their artwork, we put it into our space, into our galleries. They have their own personal gallery. We can offer them, you know, opening nights and things like that. We cover all their PR, all their social media. So the art, what it comes down to is we want the artist to concentrate on being an artist. That's it. We don't want them to have the burden of, oh my gosh, you know, I got to check OpenSea, how much is left in my wallet or anything like that. We cover all those things for them. We take care of it, as us Italians would say, soup to nuts. It's really, really remarkable how fast the word has spread. I mean, my DMs now in LinkedIn are, I'm at the point, and you and I talked about this on a previous phone call. I'm at the point now that I think I need the Artist Collective is looking into having admins for us to handle a lot of these back end things for just general business questions and things like that, because our time is now taken with Zoom calls, not only with things like this, which is wonderful. I'm honored to be doing this. I really am. I've never done anything like this before on a side note. So it's, I'm all giddy. So thank you. Yeah, man. So it's, we're inundated. We're inundated with calls. I have a call later today. It's going to be a little late there, but I have a call to a gentleman in London that's possibly talking about opening up a metaverse space for Slapshot Jerky to have a Slapshot Jerky arena with Slapshot Jerky NFT project. But there's a lot of things on the horizon. But you know, I'm that crossroads and the elephant in the room that I mentioned a moment ago. You know, is kind of still relevant. Sure.
Mm-hmm. No, but it does sound like things are moving in the right direction for you. Maybe not in the direction that you initially thought things would go. Sometimes that's how life works, right? Like we plan and God laughs, as they say. But let me ask you one more question, just as we start to wind this up a little bit. So we talked a lot about NFTs, and you mentioned some really cool stuff I think the Artist Collective is doing to help new artists to get on board. One of the things you mentioned was sort of that movement towards debit cards and credit cards, as opposed to having to do this whole wallet setup and MetaMask and Phantom, all that stuff that's really difficult to get onboarded with. I'd love to know from your side, what are some of the emerging developments in the NFT space that you are most excited for in 2022?
Well, strangely enough, and I say this because it ties into the AC with the artists. As I mentioned, they're our number one concern right now. And this, I'll say this first within the Artist Collective and then say something outside of that. The advent of this platform where people can now use their debit cards and their, you know, their Visas and MasterCards and things like that, that is a game changer for us as artists. And I say this because I have many friends, traditional artists, including myself, collectors. Yeah, they own Bitcoin, but that's about it. And that's through their accountant. You know, that's through their financial planner. Some of them, the percentage is extremely low. And I'm talking like real art collectors, you know, the collectors that, you know, go to the Sotheby's auctions and to, you know, some of the larger sell-off auctions and things like that. And, you know, not to discredit the smaller galleries, but, you know, we're catering to all galleries, but it's those individuals in particular that we are coming to find that they are the ones that just want to click. So to be able to provide that service for these higher demographic collectors, if you will, to offer this type of service to where they don't need to go through all of that whole smash, it's a game changer for us because it's now bringing I don't want to say real money, but it's bringing in regular currency, you know, the currency that we all know and use, the non-crypto side. So that is wonderful. One of the outside of the AC, it's multiple. I mean, it's a list, both with some PFP projects like the MetaMoms, the True Stars NFT. There's a lot of movements on the women's NFT side as far as inclusion and things like that. I'm really, really excited to see that emerging into the space. You know, it'd be cool to have a Basie, but I'm not too into the whole PFP thing. Yeah, it could be nice to grab one, you know, when there's a dip in market, and, you know, you can kind of get it for a little bit less, not referring to a Basie, but, you know, something else. But it's what I'm most excited about is the emergence of the traditional artists coming into the digital age with their artwork by way of what I said earlier, the digital. That is the biggest thing that I lay awake at night thinking about the prospects and the possibilities and the opportunities. You know, someone mentioned to me the other day, actually, I hosted a Twitter space and the same question came up in a different format, you know, about the metaverse and with meta galleries and things like that. You know, with the metaverse, you know, when you look at an artist and you see their work and you shake their hand and you have cheese and sconces and tea with them at their art opening, you know, you can look at their website and read their story and things like that. But when their work is in a metaverse and you can go in, whether it's AR, VR, you can go in and they can actually create the space that they want. So it's essentially an extension of their mind or the influence behind the work. You know, they could they could make part of their gallery a subterranean jungle, and their work is all subterranean, you know, a wildlife and different things. And that could be tied into, from an activist standpoint, that could be tied into money, the proceeds from the sales will be allocated to a special organization to help save the rainforests, or doing, you know, help saving the, removing plastic out of the ocean. It's virtually endless. And to combine the growth of the digital and bring that into the metaverse, that is the most, that's what I think about the most. It's what I'm most excited about. And I can tell you, man, if we have this conversation in 9 months, 6-9 months from now, it could in fact be very different. Actually, I expect it to be probably by 9 months, 9 months to a year. It's going to be so, so different.
I'm with you that the space is changing so quickly. A lot of people describe it as drinking from a fire hose, because there's so much going on. There's so much you have to learn. But I know the audience has learned a lot from you today. And I, again, I'm really grateful for you.
I hope so.
For sharing your story and just being so open and honest about the things that you're going through, your ups and your downs, and how NFT and art has really helped to bring you up and lift you up.
Yeah, it brings the anxiety down. I can focus on this juggernaut that is happening with the Web3 space. You know, and I don't know. I don't really have anything to hide. I mean, as I said earlier, I wear my emotions on my face and my sleeve. But you know, yeah, there's struggles, and the folks out there, don't give up, man. You know, it's worth it, whether it works out or not. At least, you know, if it doesn't work out, you can at least go through life saying, I tried, I gave it a valid shot. If it works, well, you know, we all know what happens after that. So,
well, where can people find you online? Where can people find out more about the Artist Collective?
The Artist Collective, you can reach me at Sean, and that's S-E-A-N, at theartistcollective.xyz. And the Artist Collective's website is theartistcollective.xyz. It provides the entire roadmap, our whitelist, white papers. It's extensive. But one of the things that I've come to find with the Web3 community, we're all very eager to find out about each other. We all want each other to succeed. So, you know, to the layman, it might seem like a lot of, I don't want to say gibberish, but, you know, language that they don't understand. But once you get in there, it's really cool, man. I'm excited.
Nice. Well, Sean, it's been amazing having you on the podcast.
It's been a true honor.
Yeah, I've enjoyed this conversation. This one is a little different than we usually do. I'm pretty sure the audience, our digital creators or our digital entrepreneurs, are definitely going to appreciate this conversation that we had. So thank you very much for joining us. And
it's my pleasure. You know, and on a final note, if there are any artists out there that are curious, look us up. Look me up in LinkedIn, Sean Davis. I'm in LinkedIn. I'm in Twitter as well. It's under at Slapshot Jerky. And again, that's at Slapshot Jerky. But we go in there often, and I say we as the AC. We go into Twitter. My Twitter space is every Wednesday night at 7 p.m. Eastern. But yeah, you want to find what's going on in my daily life and start to interact, I'd love to meet up with you. Look for me in LinkedIn, and you know, we'll get you part of the collective, and you can get a better understanding of what we do and why we're doing it.
Awesome. Well, that's a great way to sign off, buddy. Best wishes to you.
Thank you. You enjoy the day, and thank you again.